We're all a little haggard this morning, which I like. I'm from Tucson, Arizona. My sobriety date is September 17th of 05. I have a little 16-month-old boy, and we're here inevitably to speak to you about parenting and so and sobriety. I feel ill-prepared because I think even only being 16 months into having a child, like there's no hindsight for me. You know, he's a little maniac, so like I have very little time to reflect and have a place of like, oh, this was a spiritual experience, or oh, this was, you know, I'm pretty much like constantly covered in urine and really tired. So this could be great, or it could be horrifying. I love when I go to a meeting with my child and they have the beginning, the preface of like, please keep children occupied and quiet. It's not a possibility for me. Like, my kid is a whirling dervish. So somebody in Florida used to say, and I love this, there's this gal in Florida when she was chairing meetings, she would say, please don't mind. It's early. I'm a crier. Please don't mind the screams and laughter of children, you know, in the meetings. Those are the sounds of families that never should have been. And I love that. I love feeling at home in Alcoholics Anonymous. As a parent, I love feeling at home in AA. And when my program changes, and when my service responsibilities change, and when my life changes, you know, I love being able to sit in this panel and feel really, really grounded and at home. When, you know, it used to be I was in the other room screaming. You know, like there's been permutations in my life, and it's been just this incredible thing. Our baby's a little miracle baby. He was a fertility baby, and the whole time that I was trying to get pregnant, I was watching these little young women, the women I sponsor, you know, the little newcomer women get pregnant, and I was so angry, so mad. And eventually, you know, the universe aligned, and we had our kid. And the night that I found out I was pregnant was the night that one of my beloved sponsees overdosed and died. And what was important about that was that it was such a reality of having this joy tempered by, you know, my life in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, which is one of, you know, sometimes there's grief and tragedy and tough stuff. And that's been typical of my time as a parent. You know, you shared the word last night that is blissful. You know, there's moments of this, like, blissful satisfaction, but then, like, I can pretty much guarantee that somewhere on my body right now is baby poop. Like, I can guarantee it, you know, and that's, you know, it's great. It's the polar opposites. And, you know, I watched people in Alcoholics Anonymous be parents. I was parented by people in these rooms. And I just wanted to say a thank you to that, first of all, because I was very ill-equipped when I came in here. I'd never held a child, you know, and to have my identity now be a sober woman of Alcoholics Anonymous and also a mother is just an incredible gift. I remember I was around 6 or 7 months sober, and I was still carrying weapons and, like, wearing all black, and I was at an AA Al-Anon women's retreat, which was like my idea of hell. It was like the ninth circle of hell. And there was a lot of hugging and a lot of like baked goods and sing-alongs. And I remember hitting my knees on this chapel and saying the seven-step prayer because I had realized that this wasn't about just not drinking. This was about a change of attitude and outlook. And tacked onto that prayer was, God, please help me to be the woman you would have me be. And at the time, my idea of that was like a very, very self-possessed woman who wore only like white linen and, you know, baked cookies and donated to the ASPCA. And like, I had this idea about who that should be, and I've grown into something that, isn't that at all. But, I'm just so in love with that process. I'm in the middle of an inventory right now, actually. Like, I was writing on it last night, and most of the principles on there, and old ideas are about motherhood. And a lot of it has to do with just not being enough. Like, when I was newly sober, somebody patted me on the hand and said, honey, you're never going to have to feel this way again if you don't want to, about early sobriety. And my experience was that I felt that way. I felt the terror, the bewilderment, the like, the being, you know, the skin inside out feeling as a new mom. And that was really scary because, like, you guys promised me that I wasn't supposed to feel that way, and I felt abject terror as a mother. And thank God for staying in the middle, you know, because even though that's happened, I know that you know, it's necessary. I had my kiddo, and I had this moment in the delivery room, like, nothing went right, but I had this moment of holding him, and this realization of, like, of self-forgetting. You know, I'd always said the St. Francis prayer, and that line, it's only by self-forgetting that one finds. I never got that. Like, there were brief moments of working with a sponsee or something like that where I was like, the jumble wasn't happening. But this was the first time, like, I had ceased to exist. And it was a really amazing spiritual experience. And my spiritual experience up to this point has been very educational. I remember thinking what a spiritual experience it was that I realized for like 3 weeks I had been flossing every night. Like that was my spiritual experience by the definition of like being able to do, feel, and believe that which I couldn't do, feel, or believe on my unaided will. And so flossing was like amazing. Like personal hygiene was my first spiritual experience. But this was something different. This was the fourth dimension. And so I'm really, really grateful to my son for giving me that through all the tough stuff. Like, he's given me presence, and it's had to be that because, you know, like, sometimes he'll just be, like, throwing up everywhere or, like, pooping on the floor. I talk a lot about bodily fluids because he's a toddler, and it's just my reality right now. But, you know, there needs to be, a place of presence for him right now, and not just physically but emotionally, and that's something I'm working on. When he was 3 months old, I had been dealing with really severe postpartum depression, and anxiety. We had left the hospital with him for the first time, and I was sobbing, because I was so scared. And it really was an expression of like the third step for me, because I couldn't control traffic, and that was the most terrifying thing of my life. You know, I had experienced some really scary things prior to my sobriety, but that, like, just knowing now there was this helpless being, you know, that I was responsible for, and I couldn't control how other people drove, was a really big, sticking point for me. You know, when I first came in, like, all I was really worried, like, I didn't have a heavy social calendar, and I had, like, a feral cat and a fat dog and scabies. Like, I didn't have a lot going, And so when this was presented to me, all of a sudden I have this idea of a family, you know, all of those things that I had thought about as like, this is what it means to be a functional member of society, and feeling so ill-equipped for that, was a struggle. And then when he was 3 months old, I was free climbing and, at a bouldering gym, and I fell off and I fractured my leg so horrendously bad. I was in the hospital for 3 days, and then I was bedridden for 3 months, and doing that with a newborn, at the time, I mean, I was telling my husband to hide the guns. You know, I everything crashed down on me in terms of like, you're not good enough, you're not doing this right, you're gonna fail him. I mean, that's the pervasive voice now. So you're gonna fail him. And with a little bit of hindsight, I could see that I needed to be broken, physically, emotionally, spiritually, because if I was continuing on the course that I was going, I know that I would have drank.
Oh, I have a bandana. Thank God for asking about swag.
So that happened, and you know, my sponsor came out, and I had all of these people rally around me, and what a gift that was. And I had to kind of give up my son, in the sense that my sponsor always was pushing me to do this, where she would have me sit and do a meditation, and I'd have to sit and give all of the things that I valued as mine, as what made me to God, you know, whether it was my husband, it was the material things, my sobriety, all of it, I would picture and try to sit through the action of releasing that, you know, without attachment. Like, I no longer get it back. And I would have to do that with my son again and again, day after day. And it was, I would feel just this extreme hollowness in that. But in the end, I had the experience of God returning that, you know, and returning him to me and with the understanding that he's not necessarily a kid. He's God's kid, you know, and can I respect that? And do whatever I can to foster his experience and growth with God. I don't know how long I've talked. Oh, good. So I just wanted to close with a story. I share it all the time, really, in relation to working with newcomers, but it's particularly appropriate for me and now having a kid. But I love the story. It's there's this little boy and 3 or 4 years old, and his mom and dad are expecting another child, and he's become like unnaturally obsessed with talking to his baby brother. And he harasses the mom and says, you know, when he comes, I need to have a conversation with him. I need to really talk to him. And the mom's like, yeah, sure. But he's persistent, and to the point where the little brother's born, and he's just bugging his parents. I need to talk to him. And then at this point, they're a little freaked out because they're like, okay, hide the pillows. He's going to smother his baby kid, you know, right, baby brother. And so finally they let him, and he's like, no, I need to do it alone. And he walks into the nursery, and they kind of crack the door and listen for it. And he leans down and whispers to his baby brother, quick, tell me what God's like. I'm starting to forget. As a parent in sobriety, I felt a returning to God, in a way that I wasn't anticipating, with the sense of like, you know, my son is now this aspirational character for like how I need to live my life. He has no fear. He has no limit to the love and friendliness that he has for other people. I watch him like share. I'm a horrible sharer. You know, I watch him share in a way, and all of these things that I'm so gifted with. And all of it has been tempered by the need to remember that my recovery needs to be paramount to him. I watched so many parents have their kids taken away in this program. It happened 3 days before we were leaving for them. You know, I watched a friend of ours have her kid taken away, and so. I have a deep motivation to try to do this stuff, with the hope that, you know, we can build a happy and functional and productive and God-filled life. So I'm really glad to be here. Thanks.
Thanks.
Please help me welcome our second speaker, Marie.
I'm Marie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
Marie.
My sobriety date is August 31st, 2007. I have two little ones. My daughter Amara, she's 4, and my son Kaden, he's 6 months old. And when I was asked to speak on this panel, I laughed. It's hilarious to me because it's something about being on a panel like implies that you know what you're talking about, and I absolutely don't. About around 3 years sober, when I got pregnant with my first daughter. And she wasn't planned, and it was just sort of one of those things, like, great, you know, God's putting this in my lap, and I need to move forward with this. And it changed my life. For a long time, I felt like a newcomer again, if that makes sense. Like, trying to get to meetings and trying to grasp these concepts all over again with this new identity as a parent. It was really challenging. The idea of trying to find balance, trying to make it through a meeting. You know, there are a lot of meetings that aren't kid-friendly. There's not a lot of meetings that offer childcare. And that was really hard. my meeting attendance kind of went way down, and I'm lucky that I have a sponsor. And that's just the reality. I know, like, I don't like to say that to sponsees or other people because that sounds bad, but it's like, the reality was, you know, like, my husband's working, I'm working, I've got this little kid, and, you know, I can't just be like, okay, sit tight, I'm going to go to a meeting. It's just, you know, it's just not possible. And so I kind of had to get creative. And it was really turning to the fellowship, turning to work with my sponsor. You know, I'd have women come over to my house and bring me a meeting. And that was phenomenal. You know, my sponsor, she doesn't have kids. So she kind of learned a lot through me and through this process. But she just kept encouraging me, you know, when can we get to a meeting? How can I get you childcare? And just women kind of rallying together. I had to ask for a lot of help. And my son's 6 months old, and when he came along, this, you know, again, I felt like a newcomer again, and it was really rough. This isn't like a pretty story of like a spiritual experience. It was horrible, actually. When he was born, he wasn't breathing. He couldn't breathe on his own. And I remember in the delivery room, they kind of handed him to me. And, you know, I was waiting to hear him cry, and there was just silence, and it was just the most horrifying thing. And they took him away, and I kind of see them over there. They were performing CPR on this tiny little baby, and he started to seize from lack of oxygen. And in that moment, I had this moment of horror, like, if anything happens to him, can I make it through this? Can I do this? I didn't know. He was, you know, put in a helicopter and this giant machine and whisked off to the NIC unit in Phoenix, and where he was there for a week. And I remember just that whole week, like, praying and trying so hard to not pray for my will, but just praying to allow me to accept whatever was going to happen. And I connected so much to your story of sort of, like, giving that up. And really, like, having to give my son up to a power greater than myself. And I'm not going to lie, like, there were moments where I thought about drinking. And I didn't, you know, I did all the things that they tell us to do. I called my sponsor. You know, I went to meetings down in Phoenix. You know, I was there from, like, 6 in the morning to midnight just sitting with them. And, you know, my husband and I would kind of trade off and try to get to meetings. And thank God things started to shift, you know, and he was able to breathe on his own. And he's this just beautiful, happy, chunky little baby across the hall. And, but that was hard, you know, and I really remember that experience as far as realizing that in a sense they're my kids, but they're not, you know. There's a power much greater than myself. And I have to give them over to that, almost on a daily basis. These steps, these principles have applied to just about every area of my life. You know, I've worked the steps around relationships, around work, around, you know, different challenging things that have happened in my life. And I've worked, you know, done step work around my kids, too, and just especially that third step of turning them over. I mean, talk about powerlessness. We've got 2 sick kids, and they're, you know, like, super glued to you. Like, you can't even get, you know, can't even go to the bathroom in privacy. And you kind of have to surrender to that process and let go. I don't get to do it my way all the time. I'm a control freak. I'm a perfectionist. I want things to be a specific certain way, and having children has really challenged every single character defect that I have, and challenged me to turn it over again and again and again. You know, and I get that feeling of, like, not being good enough. I've always struggled with that. I think that was a big part of why I used and drank. I just felt completely defective. And becoming a parent, I struggled with that for a long time. And you know, and also, I'm a therapist, so I'm thinking about all the different ways I'm screwing up my kids and traumatizing them and the complexes that they're going to have. And I can literally drive myself crazy. And I've come to the realization that, like, you know, if I do the next right thing, if I do the best that I know how to do, that is good enough. That will always be good enough, even if I make mistakes. You know, living in that third step, that will always be good enough, no matter what. And I've gained a lot of peace from that. You know, that if I'm angry and snap at my kid, you know, that's okay. Like, I am completely imperfect, and I've come to a place of real acceptance and peace about that. And it takes a lot of the edge off. You know, I'm a working mom too, so you know, I work full time, and I went through, you know, a lot of feeling not good enough there, like, wow, I really should be, you know, spending all my time and every minute with my kids and nurturing them. And the reality is, like, I would go crazy. That is not okay for my, like, mental health and my sanity. And that's okay. You know, I've come to a place of acceptance around that and realizing that, you know, through working and balancing that, you know, I can model that for my kids. You know, I can model that behavior and that balance. And the time that I do have with them is that much more valuable, that much more precious. You know, like, by the end of the day when I come home from work, like, I'm so excited to see them. It's the greatest part of my day, is seeing my little babies and getting to hold them. And it is such a gift, you know. And what you said about, you know, these are the sounds of families that would never be. I mean, holy shit, my husband's in recovery too. I wouldn't have these kids if it weren't for this program. I wouldn't have a family if these people weren't for this program. Like, my children are a product of AA, in a sense, you know, that I was going nowhere really fast. And the ability to be a parent, to be an imperfect parent today, is a direct result of this program, of working these steps. And I'm, you know, it's such a gift that I get to raise my children in this, you know, within this spiritual movement. You know, the 12 steps AA is this worldwide spiritual movement, and my children, you know, regardless of how they turn out, that's another fear. It's like, God, baby. You know, I look and see, I'm like, that is so alcoholic. My 4-year-old, you know. And I don't know, that's another thing I have to turn over. I have no control, I have no power over that. But I do get to teach her spiritual principles, you know. Very simple spiritual principles. I had to be taught very simple spiritual principles because I didn't get it. And now I get to teach, you know, spirituality to my daughter, like meditation. You know, I never did that. But she, we call it the peaceful piggy meditation, you know. And she learns how to be a peaceful piggy, and we practice breathing in and out. You know, we practice, you know, connecting with other people. We practice being of service and helping other people and sharing. Like, I get to use these spiritual principles in the way I raise my children. And that's such a gift. And she'll have that no matter what her path is. Like, she'll have that, and she'll have parents who model that for them. And that's so beautiful. It's such a gift to have these tiny little spiritual beings that that I get to watch and interact with. I get to watch them grow and develop because of this program. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you. Please welcome our third speaker, Tim.
Thanks. I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah. Tim.
My sobriety date is actually August 30 of 1998, so today is my 16 years. Yeah. That's pretty wild. And so that's kind of weird. And then ASCIPA, I was on the host committee for ASCIPA in 1999, and I don't know. It's just weird being in this on this side of ASCIPA, the old side. But it's good. Thank you, ladies, for sharing. I'm feeling all emotional now. I also didn't really sleep that good last night. I took, yeah, maybe. Unfortunately, I took Sudafed before bed instead of Benadryl, so I didn't sleep very well last night, and then got up early to drive here. So hopefully my thoughts are coherent and my words are coherent. But, yeah, man, being a parent is crazy. I had no concept of how selfish I was until we had our daughter. And, I don't know, I always thought that, you talked about, you know, fertility, and I always thought that, you know, I spent, you know, like 10 years of my semi-adult life trying to avoid having kids, and, you know, I'm sober a bunch of years, and, you know, I meet the woman of my dreams, and we get married, and we decide to start a family, and we're not able to. And the same thing, I see people who don't want to have kids, and that aren't ready to take care of kids, have kids. And I'm like, God, what's up with that, you know? And, jeez. I'm a man of faith. Like, God's going to work this out. And we come to the point where my wife, you know, every month, it's just another tragedy for her. And her heart is broken again and again and again. And me, I'm the strong man, whatever, and we're gonna get through this and we're gonna make it. And finally she says, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And, I don't know why this is so emotional for me right now. But, and so I'm pissed, you know what I mean? I'm pissed at God. And so I spent 3 days just angry at God. And, you know, I'm thinking about the cost of adoption, and finally I'm like, all right, you know, this is your life and this is what it's going to look like. So you're going to have to provide that money. And, you know, it's the next day I show up at work and I get like this giant bonus. And it wasn't like I hadn't gotten a bonus in years, and it wasn't like, I'd done anything more spectacular than the two previous years before. You know what I mean? I was doing fine, but it wasn't. And so it was at that point, I was like, okay, cool. You know, we're on the right path. And so, you know, so we just go through this process, and, you know, we meet this amazing, you know, through the adoption agency, we meet this amazing girl who chooses us. And, you know, we get to walk with her in life, and she's sober. You know what I mean? It's like, wow, she's sober in AA. And, you know, we didn't meet her through AA. We meet her through an agency. And she knows, she used to work with a lady that I worked with, and she used to be in a Bible study group with a lady that leads Bible study groups with my wife. So it's like just this amazing thing of God working it out. And so, you know, our daughter is born, and, you know, kind of like you talked about, like just this. So our joy is to have this little girl, and this mother has to give her up, and it's her pain. And so at the same time, we're feeling this amazing joy, we're feeling her pain. And it's just funny how that is. And the same thing, I had a sponsee who had a friend the day after Melanie was born, had two little girls that got killed in a car accident. And so it's like, God's just, you know, doing these things. It's like totally outside of my control. But anyway, so we have two beautiful, my daughter's going to be 4 in a week. My son just turned 1 and he's adopted as well. And I don't know, being a parent just changes you. And you guys talk about, I have meetings. I go to one a week, basically. I go to my home group. I try not to miss it. And you know, I read the family afterword. I haven't read the family afterword in God knows how long. But I read it trying to find some, you know, some very AA related topics according to, you know, around parenting. Because there's just not that much in the big book about parenting. And there really isn't anything in the family afterword either. It's, you know, basically, you know, forgive your kids and, you know, try to find a balance. You talked about a balance. And I feel like the most important thing is obviously I have to stay sober, and, you know, I have to work, but I feel like spending time with my kids is just so important, and being there for them, and like you talked about, teaching them spiritual principles. Mm-hmm. And what a joy. You know, I think my parents for the most part did a pretty good job, but you know, but there's no spiritual principles taught to me. So you know, I learned a whole different set of tools. And my parents did the best they could. And when I look at their parents, they did a way better job than their parents did. So I feel grateful for that. And I feel grateful to have this opportunity to pour into these kids and give them, you know, the things that I didn't have. And I still had it good. But I feel like I get to elevate them, you know, to the next level. And like you said, they're God's kids before they're my kids. And my daughter has so many alcoholic tendencies. She sounds like your son. She's just wild. She's just like a firecracker. And from the moment she wakes up to the moment she goes to bed, she doesn't stop talking. She doesn't stop moving. But it's beautiful. Her personality is so beautiful, and she's so full of joy and so full of love for people. And so, like, she'll just go up to anyone and talk to them. And, you know, it just breaks my heart because I know that people are going to break her heart. And I know that, you know, she's just so open about everything. And, you know, she'll go up to older kids, and older kids don't know what to do with her, and they'll just, like, walk away, and she's like, God, I'll just follow them around. And I don't know. So, I try and, you know, I pray, I, we pray with her all the time. It's just a trip. This has been a really weird experience, this meeting for me. I think it's been a pretty long time that I've been on the verge of tears for the whole time I've spoken meeting. But I feel blessed. I feel really grateful. I feel like I was actually prepared to be a parent. I feel like I had a level of serenity and a level of financial stability and a level of peace and a level of knowledge about myself. And it's all because of the steps and because of this amazing relationship that I have with God. And I have an amazing relationship with my wife. And I totally make mistakes. And I think about the impact that might have on my kids, but I know that God's got them, and I just want to do what's best for them. So I don't know that that's super helpful for anybody if you're looking for advice from parenting. I think, you know, talk to me in 20 years, we'll see how my kids turn out, and we'll know. You know what I mean? Like, you should have somebody up here who's got really awesome kids that are grown up and raising their kids, and then maybe you'll know if I'm a good parent or not. But I feel like a really, I felt like the best parent ever when I just had one child. Now that I have two, I feel like I neglect both my kids because I don't have time for them both. And I don't know how people with multiple kids do it. If anymore, it just feels like I'm stretched so thin in every area of my life. And AA's given me, it talks about a host of friends, and I have way more friends than I have time for. And people that are so near and so dear to my heart, and people that I'd love to be able to spend more time with, and I just, the time is just not there. And I pray all the time that God would give me this, you know, what am I supposed to do? There's so many good things in this world that I can do, and so many opportunities, service in AA and service with my church and helping out people, and service to my coworkers and service to my kids and service to my wife and service to my parents. And it's just a juggling act, and I trust that as I pray through this and as I walk God's path and ask Him to guide, you know, and direct everything that I'm doing, that I'm doing what He would have me do first and foremost, and not what I would be doing first and foremost, just trying to die to myself and put myself in the back seat and try and put everyone else first around me. And I think that's the heart of God. I think the heart of God is me serving my kids and my wife and my friends and my family and my sponsees and my coworkers and my clients, and trying to put everyone first. And in a sense, when I can do that successfully and take myself completely out of the picture, I find God takes care of me. And all the problems that I think I have and all the problems that I want to solve and control and whatever else, when I take the time to work on someone else's problems, to try and put myself in there, shoes in their place and see how I can best serve them. Like, it's like I'm just trusting that God's going to take care of my problems, and He does. My problems are, you know, there's billions of people that would line up around the block for my problems. So, and I'm grateful for everyone that's here. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim. Are there any questions for the speakers? Okay. Let's go out with the responsibility pledge. Oh, sorry.
You mentioned that these gifts of sobriety, your kids, that you don't get to go to as many meetings. What are some of the things that you do throughout the day to maintain that spiritual contact? Because you can't get to meetings like everyone else.
That's for me, obviously. You're looking at me. Well, I try and get up early in the morning and before my kids get up, because there's no silence in my house once my kids are up. And I have a hard time. I pray throughout my day, but I find I really, really need the morning to spend time with God and quiet my mind and get before my Creator and listen and pray and read. And so when I do that, it sets me up for a good day. I don't always do that, but I'm getting pretty good at that. And then throughout the day, like I said, I just try and keep in contact. I try and keep in contact with God. And, you know, I try and use the tools that the steps have given me. Pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or direction. You know, watch for fear, dishonesty, resentment, and selfishness. And when they crop up, ask God at once to remove them. Talk to someone if the opportunity arises. I'm not always as good as that. Good at talking to another alcoholic about those things. Making amends where I see I need to make amends and trying to see where I can focus my attention on someone that I can help. So it's the steps. It's the, you know, I want so many other things to work, but it's the steps in my relationship with God. And the cool thing is I've had all this time and all this practice that I get to live it as a design for living, you know, failingly, falteringly, but it's what works. And I just keep going back to it.
I don't really have a question. I just want to say thank you for your sharing your stories about parenting. And one of my favorite things about the program in this short year, a little over a year that I've been in the program, is that from each one of you, I've pulled something that I can totally relate to, and I feel like I'm not alone. You know, other people have these same problems and experiences, and it's just nice to know that the crazy things that I feel in parenting and the experiences I've had, somebody else has had those similar, and they're still here, and they have a way to get through it, just like I do.
Any other questions? Okay, let's go over to responsibility.